Happy Hanukkah world. Today's daf in Masechet Nedarim, brought to you from Yerushalayim Ir HaKodesh, is daf Nun Zayin, and we're holding right at the Halakha Mishnah at the top of the daf, and we are continuing to examine the question of classes of Isser, and now we're getting back into the issue of the differences between classes of Isser. At least this is the way the Ran understands it. The difference between classes of Isser and specific Isser. And those will have to do with the issue of switching them for something else and things that grow from them. And we're finally going to get into the idea of extensions rather than what we had before, which were things that were translations of the original into other forms and so on. Now we're going to talk about extensions, which is a new idea. Okay, so let's start at the top of our Mishnah. And this is a bit confusing because it seems, as the Ran points out, to have everything to do with the question of Rami Bar Chama before, about the question of Chilufim v'Gidulim. And there are different approaches among the Rishonim here. We will take the Ran's approach and follow it through the sugya. So, konem peirota elu alai. Konim heim al pi, konim heim li pi. So if the person uses the lashon of konam, and he specifies which peros he's talking about, so then no matter how he phrases it, whether he talks about his mouth, which would be mashman and zdafka, as question of achila, or whether he just says in general konam peros eilu, it's always the same. Because once you say konam, so then your intent is to make it similar to a carbon. Once you're trying to make it similar to a carbon, so then it gets a din of an iser, the same way hegdish is usser. In which case, the particular thing becomes usser, and therefore, even if, just like in hegdish, if you exchange hegdish for something else, so that something else takes on the iseri hegdish, so too over here, that's called the chilupin. And if you plant it, then whatever it is that you planted itself would be considered to be a direct hana'ah, which you got out of what it is that you planted. However, remember that we read the diet before, there's a difference between gidulin and gidulei gidulin. So here we're talking about gidulin and not gidulei gidulin at all. Now, if, however, you don't say perot elu, this is the way the Ran understands it, you say konem perot Shani ocher v'shani to'em, then he's mutter b'chilufeyenu b'gidaleyem. So there, since he talked about the particular eating or tasting of these peirot, so then if that's the case, if you switch them for something else, you're not tasting these peirot. You didn't say that they're going to be like hegdash. And because of that, if something grows from them, you're not tasting them. But wait, not necessarily. Because let's say that you've got an onion. Okay, you plant the onion. Now that onion continues to expand, grows new onions. By the time you come back the next year, you've got 200 onions instead of the onion that you used to have before. So, okay, is that part of the original onion? I mean, because if you take a look at the plant, I mean, the plant is expanding, right? The original onion keeps sprouting new pieces, and there's new onions that are coming out of it. That is called, the technical term for that is, as Gavi is writing down, is ein zaro kala. Ein zaro kala means, as opposed to things that grow from seeds, things that grow from bulbs in this way are very different. Because things that grow from seeds, the seed deteriorates as the plant grows out of the seed. There's no longer anything left of the seed by the time the plant has grown. Masha Enken, if you're talking about things like potatoes or onions over there where the root of the bulb provides extensions of the original, so then it's very different. Then there is a tam of the original in the growth, because we could see that possibly as expansions. Now, of course, this raises the question about rov in cases of iser, right? Because as we know, we had many times something grows and it grows to such an extent that it's mevatel, the iser that was associated with the thing that it grew from. So is that considered to be an extension of the original thing? The whole thing is usser. Or could you actually be mevatel an onion that was usser with the onions that grow out of it because they're mutter? So that's something the Gemara is going to look into later. So you could see how the Mishnah raises this question for us. If it's something where we have like an onion, so then over there, there's no limit. Here we say just gidulim or asur, right? If it's a dover shezarokola, so therefore, if it's something she'ein zarokola, this is going back on every bit of the Mishnah. So the difference between gidulim and gidulim is only true if it's zarokola. The iser, which was only if he said perot elu as opposed to shani yochel, is only if it's a dover shezarokola. But if it's ein zarokola, so even that case would be aser. Now, how about if you didn't use the word elu? How about if you say to your wife, Omer li ishto, konem ma'ase yadayich alai, konem hein alpi, konem hein lipi. In all of those cases, now this is the way the Ran understands the chiddush of the Mishnah, that is an expansion above and beyond the opening of the Mishnah, is that here he didn't use the word elu. Nonetheless, the fact that he was miyached the specific results of his wife's work, and of course, obviously we're going to have to explain this the way the Gemara said before, that how can you aser work? I mean, that's not something that has mamish. We said a neder can only be chal on something that has substance. So we explained it before that it's talking about yadayich lo osayich l'kabi hegdesh, or yadayich l'ma'asayich b'nogei neder, such as over here. But that would mean that the specific thing is aser. It's not a class of items that are aser. It's a specific thing that was made by those yadayim. And therefore, in this case, it would be the equivalent, this is a chiddush, that would be the equivalent of saying elu. Furthermore, the distinction, and the second part of the Mishnah, is also a bigger chiddush, as the Ran explains it. And therefore, the Mishnah continues to say, that when do we say this, that it's mutter? If he said shani ochel v'shani otem, toem, it's mutter b'chilufayim b'gidulehem, that's davka b'davar shezar okala, avadavar she'ein zar okala, afilu gidulei, gidulin, would be osir. So now, that seems to be very much repetitive, and the question is, what exactly would it be teaching us? Ran understands that it's teaching us something very important. Because lomaisa, the way that we understood the resha of the Mishnah, is that the shani to'em, or shani ochel, or shani to'em, is not talking about where he said perot elu, shani to'em. He's talking about particular class of perot, shani to'em. So therefore, the sefer is telling me a bigger chiddush than the equivalent words in the resha, is the way the Ran understands it. That over here, since it's the equivalent of elu, because he said the perot that my wife makes, so then he's identifying specific perot as opposed to a class of figs or whatever. So therefore, I would have thought that in that case, saying shani ochel or shani to'em will not limit it to dafka, the things where I could still get the direct taste of that thing. I would say, well, since you said elu, so then that would mean that it would be usher in all chilufin and gidulim, like we said before. Now, this, of course, brings us back to that original question that was raised earlier by Rami Bar Chama, and that's why this Mishnah is very confusing. And the Ran talks about this confusion. Before, we said that Rami Bar Chama wanted to know, we had this back on Mem Zayin, Rami Bar Chama wanted to know, when you say konim peros ha'elu al ploni, what would be the din of chilufayim? And the question is that Rami Bar Chama wanted to know whether the Mishnah says that your usher b'chilufayim or b'gidulayim, is that dafka because you had that in mind, and therefore it would only be the one who makes the neder that could usher on himself, can't usher on somebody else because it would be like ushering someone else's thing, a dover that it doesn't even exist yet, on him. So it would be dafka, the noder would be usher. Or maybe it was a general halacha of all Isurim, that the halacha would be that anything that comes from them has the same halacha, chilufayim kigidulehem. Right? And therefore, it wouldn't have anything to do with saying elu. That was the question of Rami Bar Chama. Fine. However, Rami Bar Choma, says the Ran, had no question whatsoever that the idea of Elu certainly is Davka. So the question over here is, our Mishnah is talking about answering them. Would it be us who's calling them Konam? Would it be usher on everyone? That would be the question. That was not what Rami Bar Choma was talking about, because he was talking about the noder being usher. The mudder would not be usher. So the question would be, over here, in this case, where he called it konam and gave it a din of hegdesh, so then the question would be, if we would say chilufeim or kigiduleim, there would be no difference between the noder and the mudder. You would be applying an isser that the Torah gives to it, and it would make no difference. So when we said Elu, why would we need to say Elu if that's the case? If the problem is that he said Konim, what does Elu have to do? Says the Ran, Elu doesn't have to do with anything. That's with Chalib and with the Gidulim. Elu has to do with the question of if you exchanged it for other Peres by somebody else, not that you were Machlif the Peres. So if you weren't Machlif the Peres, it wouldn't be Usser. That's how he understands it, that the Isser of Chalipin is Bedavka, where you yourself were Machlif it. However, if you said Elu and you gave it a din of Konam, so then that would be true of anybody who is Machlif it. So there's many factors that need to be taken into consideration. Again, whether the difference is between class of objects or specific objects, whether there's a nafkamina between the one who made the neder or the person who is asered by someone who makes the neder, whether a person makes the neder in terms of iser or whether he makes the neder in terms of konam. Does he make the neder without specifying that it has to do with the taste or the achila of the object, in which case we wouldn't be concerned about the question of, well, if you no longer it's the object, you could say you did a bad thing in exchanging it, but you're not tasting it in it, so it wouldn't be usher. Or whether it would be a general din of Isurei Hana flipping or growing, chilufin or gidulin. All of these, plus the additional question, is it dependent in the da'at of the noder, or is it the creation of a state of iser, which would apply to everyone? Another issue, is he the one who did the chalipin, or is it someone else who did the chalipin? So you see, if we've got these 10 different issues that we need to take into consideration, then the differences, the subtle differences between the cases in the Mishnah, which are four different cases, really, each one of which is totally different according to the Ran, and he brings riots to this from the Gemaras we've had before and the Gemaras we're going to have afterwards, that you see the Gemara brings different types of proofs from different parts of our Mishnah. And that would mean that we have a lot of possible alternatives to explain the questions that were raised previously by Rami Bar Choma about Gidulim and Chilupin with the questions of the Mishnah here, and we're able to distinguish between them. So as I told you, we're taking the Ran's approach, but I wanted you to see all of the possible elements that can be taken into consideration, because Tosfos, the Rosh, and other Rishonim have different approaches to which is the most significant issue in the Mishnah here, and even how to read the Mishnah in terms of case number two. Is it Peros, Elu, which are She'eni Toyem, or is this a completely different case? Perot, of whatever class, She'eni Toyem V'She'eni Ochel. Again, all of this is up in the air, depending on who we're learning it according to. So therefore, according to the Ran, the big chiddush over here is that since the Reisha, I'm talking about case two in the Reisha, where he added Shani To'im, where over there you would have thought Shani To'im, which is unnecessary to say, might have been an expansion of the Yisurim. In fact, it acts exactly the opposite way. Even in the case, the chiddush over here, it's not enough to say that doesn't add anything, it actually subtracts in terms of chalipin, v'gidulim. So over here, it's telling us that even if I say the idea of elu, I can still make that less if I say she'eni toim v'she'eni oicha. Okay, that's the Ran's explanation of the four cases that we've had so far in the Mishnah. The other parts of the Mishnah we talked about earlier, we referenced this Mishnah, However, it was quite complex because of the big machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and Rav and Rabbi Nachman that we had earlier. I'm going to remind you of this, even though the Gemara doesn't go through it again, because it yields completely different pirushim in the Mishnah. So we'll start this again, and you'll remember, I'm assuming, what we did before. So the reason that we bring this in here, ostensibly, is because we're talking about someone who asked the Maisi Adayim of the Isha. So now we want to talk about the interrelationship of a Tnai versus the actual Neder. So you remember, we had a big machlokas before, whether a person will keep a Tnai of a Neder, which will end up asering him on something that he was already over on, just as much as you would the netter, or whether we are afraid that, no, you cannot trust a person to be shomer at tonight. So let's say if he's going to aser himself on something today, if he does something tomorrow, is it usher to do that thing today because we don't believe he won't do it tomorrow because he already did the netter part and the other part is just the tonight? So even though if he does the tonight, it will retroactively make him over on the netter yesterday. People are not really sensitive to retroactive. They're sensitive to now. Is this usher? Yes or no? But when they come tomorrow and they say, is it usher for me to drive my car? Well, if you drive your car, then yesterday the fruit that you ate are going to be usher. Yeah, but that was yesterday. So that was the machlokas that we had about whether people are equally machbit on a tanai that will retroactively make it that they were over a neder, or whether once it was mutter at the time, they no longer can really focus on the interrelationship of things that happened backwards in time. This was a big machlokas that we had earlier. We brought this Mishnah in the context of that machlokas. So let's take a look at it again, and then we'll be able to review the shittas that we had before. So here a guy said, first let's clarify the language. He says to his wife, anything that you're going to make, I am not going to eat until Pesach. You know, do we understand the until Pesach to be going back to anything that you're going to make until Pesach, I will never eat, or anything that you make ever, I won't eat until the coming Pesach? That's two different possibilities. This doesn't yet get us to the machlokas we had before. Or if he says, anything that you knit for me, I'm not going to wear until Pesach. Clearly the issue of your until Pesach goes back to what you said you won't do. Does not define what it is that she's making or cooking. So over there, if she makes something before Pesach, then it makes no difference. After Pesach, he's allowed to eat it because he only said, I won't eat it till Pesach. Not what you make till Pesach, I'll never eat. That for sure is not the definition. So how about if he said it the other way around? So we need to clarify this in order to get to the important part of the Mishnah. So what if he said, anything that you make till Pesach, I will never eat? Well, that's a totally different thing. Or anything that you knit until Pesach, I will never wear. So then, until Pesach defines the period in which she makes it. So that defines the chefs of the Yisr, not what it is, the time in which he's accepting that he's not going to do it. So it has no connection. These two statements are utterly different. In the one, Ada Pesach defines what the Yisr is on me, and the other one, Ada Pesach defines what is the chefetz that I'm answering, not what I'm saying I won't do. Okay, so now let me talk about the interesting case. So if he says to his wife that if you go to your father's house anytime from now till Sukkot, then you cannot be nene from me until Pesach. Okay, now this is very strange. So she hasn't gone to her father's house yet, right? So it's now Pesach. It's up till Pesach. So she's got 2 months till Pesach and she's got 8 months till Sukkot. So if she eats in the next 2 months, what happens if she goes and visits her family after that? till Sukkot, in 6 months after that. But then what she would have eaten before would have become usur retroactively. Ah. So this is exactly the question. That's what it seems to be. So this is exactly the question that we raised before. Is it mutter for her currently, where she did not go visit her family? She wants to be nena ad Pesach. Well, why not? Why not? Because what if she ends up going? What is that supposed to mean? Why would she end up going? Aren't people makpid on the darim? And we don't answer other things because maybe you're going to end up doing something against your neder. Whoever heard of such a thing? Yes, but in this case, what it is that you'll be doing, namely going to your father's house, is not usur. It's only a trigger for a neder that you were already over. That's the question that we had. So first, let's clarify the meaning of the state. If she goes before Pesach, so then she's usur, obviously, until Pesach. If she goes after Pesach, then she could retroactively be over on Baal Yachel Devaro. So it's a very different situation. Now, this, of course, led us before to two completely different ways of explaining the Mishnah. So we have a contingency clause in the neder. The contingency clause clicks in after the period of the neder was over, right? Now it says over here, it seems to be saying over here, that she would be usur then, mashma, but if she didn't go, so then she's mutter to eat until, that's what it says. Only if she goes before Pesach is it usur to eat until Pesach. But what if she didn't go before Pesach? So then she would be okay in eat. But what if she might trigger it? So apparently we're not worried about might triggering it, right? This leads us to the machlokas. So Reb Nachman said, well, what's the problem? While she's doing the thing, it's not a neder. So what are you worried about? That afterwards she'll trigger the neder to be retroactively a neder? Why would she do that? Triggering the neder is just as bad as being over the neder in the first place, and we can rely that a person is not going to be over on their neder. That's Reb Nachman. But Reb Yehuda Merav said before that actually the Rabbanan assert her to be nena even until Pesach because we're worried she might end up going to her father's house after Pesach, between Pesach and Sukkot. And we don't trust people to keep a tanai. So there we have to change the meaning of the Mishnah. Because the Mishnah seems to be saying, if she didn't go before Pesach, it's fine. But it isn't fine. So therefore, he'll have to say, Rav will have to say, that when it says she's usur if she went, that means not just that she's usur, it means she'll get malchus. But if she didn't go, she won't get malchus. But she's still usur. She's usur only min rabbanan because of the chashash that maybe afterwards she will go. Fine. In the other case, if she went after Pesach, so then, again, what does that mean? So according to Reb Nachman, all it's saying is that if she ends up being nena from him before Pesach, she better be careful because then the Baal Yachel, she will catalyze the Baal Yachel retroactively. So afterwards, she's going to be usur by Baal Yachel. That's what it means. The thing is, though, that according to Reb Yehuda Merav, it's explaining, it's saying, why do we say that you're usur to go before Pesach min Rabbanan? Because in order to avoid the possibility of being over on Baal Yachel, it's a gzeirah d'Rabbanan beforehand in order not to be over on Baal Yachel. So it's a completely different way of understanding the Mishnah, depending on whether we're cheshesh, that a person will be over, like Rav is, Reb Yehuda Merav, or we're not cheshesh, I'll leave it to Reb Nachman. So what about in the opposite case? We're at nenetli ad achag. So he says to his wife before Pesach, all the way up to Sukkot, you're not going to be able to have any hanah from me if you end up going to your family's house until Pesach. So if she goes before Pesach, so then she's asura, obviously, until Sukkot. So again, according to Rav Yehuda Merav, it's saying over here the difference, that there, here she becomes asura even with the chiyav of Malkus. But if she doesn't go, she's still going to be usur because she might go. And that's an iser d'rabbanan. And if, so the din is that she's usur ad achag, But she's muteret la'achra Pesach. Why is that? Because even though she catalyzed it by going before Pesach, she, obviously he only answered her until Pesach, so she's still allowed to go after Pesach. I mean, well, obviously, why wouldn't she be? That's neither a neder nor a trigger to a neder, right? So what's the Mishnah coming to tell me? So we said over there, you would have thought that maybe the Rabbanan answered her even to go after Pesach until Sukkot, because they want her to remember that you are a surah b'hana'ah because of going before Pesach. You are a surah b'hana'ah, so therefore you can't go because we want you to remember that you're a surah b'hana'ah. No, kamash b'an, that much we don't do. They're two completely different issues. We're not going to treat the trigger like the neder and say, therefore you can't go and extend the neder beyond where it was. Okay, so we have two very different approaches to the end of the Mishnah. All right, so now let's take a look what the Mishnah said. The Mishnah said, "Omer liishto konam," in a case where he says, "The masi yadayich konim em alpi, konim em lepi," and so on. So if you said konim em lepi, then you are allowed to eat it if something else grew from it, but only betnai that it grew from something that zaro is kola. But if we're talking about, let's say, potatoes, or we're talking about onions, where the zera isn't kola, then even the gidule gidulim would be aser. Now, this was a fascinating issue. Yishmael ish kvar yama. So this Yishmael, he lived in Netanya. It's a little town on the edge of the sea. So he lived in a kvar yama. And some say, no, don't make it so romantic. He wasn't Yishmael living in his little cabin on the seaside. He was living in Kfar Diyama. Diyama. That doesn't mean it was a Kfar Diyama. Anyway, he brings up, Tosus takes this very seriously. He thinks it means he brings up the onion. Okay. I mean, most of the Rishonim don't understand that he brings an onion into Besdin with him to ask what the din is of the onion. It means Hala B'yado. We always use that word, Hala B'yado, as bringing a shayla. And the shayla was about an onion. So you can use the word hela b'yado, either a mimer that you know you're quoting, or you could be hela b'yado a shayla, which you're looking for a tshuva for. And this is what he wanted to know. You went ahead and picked an onion in the Shnat HaShemitah. Now, the question is, this onion now has Kedusha Shvi'is, it might have become usher because you weren't mevayeret, and you went ahead and you planted the onion in the eighth year. Now, this onion, this is a beautiful children's book, right? It starts off with a little cabin on the edge of the sea, and the little onion that you plant keeps growing and growing and growing. So one little onion. So he plants his onion, and it grows, and it grows, and it grows, my dear children, until there's so much new onions that they are enough to be mavato b'shishim, the original onion. Wow. What would be the din? Are they now mutter or are they usser? I want to know if the new onions that grow are mutter and they're growing out of an ikr, the original onion, which was usser, can we cancel the isser of the original onion by having all of the little onions now being mavato, the original onion? So kiven the rabu gidula mi ikarai, therefore, if we have more, not from, but more than the ikar, meaning shishim, otam gidulei heter will now make the iser mutter, or maybe not. Maybe, now that, again, this is the way the Ran understands the question. He says, I'm forced to do this, as you'll see in the end of the sugya. Don't question me now. Just hold your horses. So the point over here, says the Ran, there's really only one question. It's not that there's two separate issues. It's one issue. If you're going to tell me that the gidulim are mutarim because they grow outside of the original onion, even though they grow from it, so then they would, of course, be mavato, the original onion. But if they themselves will not be mavato, the original onion, then that's because they themselves are usher. So it's all the same question. So therefore, according to the Ran, you might as well have raised the question by saying, are the gidulim mutar or usher? But then you would have thought, if I would have told you they're mutter, you would have thought maybe they can't be mavato, the original. Fine. So it's really all one question. So anyway, the question that this Yishmael on the seashore came to Rav Ami, and Rav Ami didn't know the answer. So he sent him, this Yishmael comes to Rabbi Yitzchak Nafcha. And Rabbi Yitzchak Nafcha says, I know the answer. Because the Omer Rabbi Chanina Tartita, Om Rabbi Yanai, we know that Rabbi Yanai was quoted as saying that if you planted an onion that was truma, and Robu Gidulav al Ikaro, the whole thing is mutter to non-Kohanim. Now, that doesn't mean you don't have to take off new Trumas and Maisers. Obviously, you're going to have to take off new Trumas and Maisers, but it means, in terms of the dinim of Truma, it's no longer Truma. So therefore, a Yisrael is allowed to eat it. L'mais, if he's just going to snack on one and it's achilas aroi, it's mutter, so therefore it says mutter. If you want to really collect them, and then, of course, once they become chayiv and Trumas and Maisers, min rabbanan, because onions are only chayim in a rabbanan, so finally you would take off trumas and maizos. But you can't ask, how can you use the word mutter? Because you can use the word mutter. Because this type of tevel would be mutter b'achilas arai. So there you see that something that grows out of an original onion is not considered to have the same status as the original onion. Omele Rabbi Yirmiya, ah, Rabbi Yitzchak, sneaky. As you well know, there are three different shitas in this issue, and you bring the one shita out of the three that supports your contention, and you close your eyes to the other two, which contradicts your contention. I don't think that's honest. Shavik martrein va'avik echad? You leave out the other two shitas, which are very important shitas, I'm going to bring them to you, and then you decide, yeah, we're going to bring a raya, Davka, from the Shita that we like, you know, Rabbi Yanai, I like Rabbi Yanai's Shita. Oh, so therefore we're going to ignore Rabbi Yochanan, we're going to ignore Rabbi Yonasan, as if you never heard of them. What am I referring to? What are the two Shitas? Maninu Train, that argue on Rabbi Yanai. Well, we have Rabbi Yochanan, who's quoted by Rabbi Avu in an interesting similar case. You have a newly planted tree. So it is still Orla. So it's in its third year, right? So you cut off a branch from this tree that has fruit on it. And now you graft this branch onto an old 20-year-old tree, which has very powerful root system. And now the question is, the peirot keep growing, okay? So over there, Rabbi Yochanan said, if you went ahead and took a yalda, meaning a baby tree, that had fruit, and sipcha bizikena, and you now grafted it onto an old root, b'peirot, afapishosifa matayim. Remember, shishim doesn't help to be mevatel orla, and mea doesn't help to be mevatel orla. Only matayim helps to be mevatel orla. The same thing is true about kilaya kerem. Those things were very machmeron, isurei hana. It takes 200 to 1. So over here, even if the fruit grew another 200 times as big as they were before, it's still all going to be ulcer. So that means that according to Rabbi Yochanan, new growth is not mevatel old growth. Now, in order to understand why that's a raya, you have to know that the din is that if there were no peirot on this branch of the orla tree, and then they grow, they're considered to have been growing out of the old root system, Be'ikar, and therefore they are not Orla. So the new growth is definitely not Orla on its own. It's only going to be Orla because it's seen as a gidulim of a continuation of the original fruit. And Rabbi Yochanan is saying that that is Usr. So what are you quoting me Rabbi Yanai for without mentioning Rabbi Yochanan? And you also ignored Rabbi Yonatan. Yom Rabbi Shmuel bar Rabbi Nachmeni, Yom Rabbi Yonatan. A batzal that you planted in a kerem. So here we also have kilaya kerem. The same here we have orla. We have kilaya kerem. And then they tore out the kerem. There's no more grapevines there. So at that point, anything new that would be growing would not be growing as kilaya kerem. Nonetheless, that original onion, no matter how much we have now, 200 times more than the original onion, the whole thing is aser. So what are you going and quoting me, Rabbi Yanai, about the truma? All right, fine. Go see if you can get a better raya. So they sent this back to Rabbani. This is not real. So they sent it back to Rabbani. Okay, so what do you say? So Hadar also commented to Rabbani again. And he said, okay, this time I got a good raya. The Omer of Yitzhak, Omer of Yochanan, Litra Bitzalim Shetikna. So we've got a whole bunch of onions, and nobody had taken Trumas and Maisus from it, so they're Tevel. And you went ahead and you were Metakenet, and then you planted it after your Metakenet. So now the question is, what do you need to take off Trumas and Maisers from? The stuff that I already planted, I already took off Trumas and Maisers from, right? So now the new things that are growing, okay, obviously I need to take off Trumas and Maisers from them, but do I now say, but the new growth was Mevatel the old growth, so now you got to take off Trumas and Maisers from the whole thing because you can't rely on the Trumas and Maisers that you took off before you were Mevatel it. The din is that it's mitaseret lafi kula. The whole thing you have to take off Trumas and Maisers. You can't say, well, you know, the one out of 70 that I originally, I mean, I have to take off from that again, do I? You do. So you see from there that the gidulim, which are tevel, are mevatel, the ikar, and you now need to take off Trumas and Maisers all over again. So therefore, you see from here that it is mevatel, and therefore it's b'chayev you on the original. Yeah, but that's not a raya. I mean, this is l'chumra, you know. I understand l'chumra, you can tell me that. I mean, I was asking you whether the Shemitah onion becomes mutter, and you're bringing me a case that we see over here. It's mevatel, the ikar, where the bittel is an ikar, of the ikar is a chumra. I'm asking you what the din is when the bittel of the ikar is a kula. This is no raya. Okay.